I'm Lauren Layfield, and you're listening to Your Next Podcast. This is the podcast that brings you a different series every single week, helping you to find your new favourite show. So today we are listening to The Willpower Detectives. Now, keen listeners might remember the excellent series I brought you earlier this year called To Catch a Scorpion. Do you remember that? Well, the brain behind that series, Sue Mitchell, is back with a brand new investigation. Now, at first, this one might sound like one of the spooky fiction stories we've been listening to recently, but I promise you it's not. This one is actually real. Something hasn't been adding up in small towns around Hertfordshire. People have been disappearing. They all lived alone, and one day their neighbours start wondering when they last saw them, wondering where they've gone and why their houses have been emptied and sold. I'll let Sue do the talking, but it all comes down to legal loopholes, vulnerable victims, and one particular business. This is The Willpower Detectives.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
I'm looking for a woman who disappeared. One day, Carol had an accident and went to hospital, leaving her home and her cats and her neighbours, and she never came back.
There's a lockbox outside. It doesn't look like a house that's occupied.
I have my suspicions about what might have happened to Carol, and I believe I can find her. I also think there's something really wrong here, where people like Carol have been uprooted, have vanished.
Hello. Do you want to go indoors or outdoors?
Outdoors.
Outdoors, yeah. Right.
Before we get into that, let's start where this begins for me.
You've been emailing me little clues.
Only what I found out or could remember.
Meet Hazel and her husband, Bert. They wrote to me for help because they're worried about Carol.
We always said that we thought it was something funny.
It's sad, really.
It's very sad. I'm sure she isn't the only person that this sort of happens to.
Hazel's known her friend Carol since they were young. Hazel and Bert did Carol's weekly shop until one morning in April 2022. When Carol didn't ring them as usual with her shopping list.
So, at 10:45, Hazel said, she hasn't phoned, go over and see what's wrong. So I went over there. Yeah.
You look across the road and she's about eight doors down, isn't she, on the side?
I walked to the back of the house. I couldn't climb the fence, you know.
You look quite agile, though.
Well, I could climb so far. And I knocked on the window and shouted through the door and all sorts of things, because it was unusual. Exactly 10:45 every Wednesday, went and did a shopping at Lidl.
Up until this point, Carol, who's in her mid-60s, seemed to have been in good health. Carol never married and lived with her older brother on Hazel Street in Uxbridge in West London. 4 years ago, Carol's brother died.
They went everywhere together as a brother and sister. Very interested in air shows. They had a camper van at that time, didn't they? They used, both of them off they used to go. They were very close.
Hazel thinks her friend was always a little bit unworldly, though, a little bit too trusting, because throughout her life, her older brother Vic had always been in charge of everything.
I think after Vic died, she had no one. And she used to come to us every Saturday and have lunch with us.
Every Saturday morning, I would get my bag, go off to Morrison's and bring sausage rolls back. And
I can't understand why she...
From what Bert and Hazel could glean about what had happened to their friend, Carol had some kind of infection and had collapsed at home. She couldn't get up to call for help.
Police went down here.
It's like a little snicket between the two houses.
Yeah, tried the back door, walked through the kitchen and into the dining room. There she was laid down on her back.
They thought there was a possibility that she wasn't going to live.
She was there, lying there from Sunday right through to Wednesday. The ambulance took her straight away.
Bert and Hazel couldn't visit Carol in hospital because she was in intensive care. and there were COVID restrictions in place at the time, but they phoned every day.
She was in ICU for a long time. Then I rang the ward and they said, oh, she's been moved. And I went, oh, where? And they said, oh, to rehabilitation, ready to go back home.
But Carol didn't come home. The hospital said she'd been transferred to a care home to complete her recovery. When Hazel and Bert rang the care home where Carol had been sent, they couldn't make contact with her. And since then, you've hardly seen her?
I haven't seen her at all.
Since then, you haven't seen her at all?
Nope.
I mean, I don't even know now if she's still alive. Really, really don't know.
So Hazel and Bert just kept an eye on Carol's house and went in and out looking after Carol's cats. Then one day, 4 months after Carol was moved from hospital to the home, a man turned up and he left a business card that described him as a partner in a law firm that was miles away in another county.
I said, oh, which one do you represent? And he gave me a name and I said, never heard of those. He said, oh, no, we're based in Essex. I said, why has she got a solicitor down in Essex? She had two cats that we'd looked after for a long time when she'd gone into hospital. And he got in touch and asked us if we would continue to keep looking after them and he would pay us the money for the food.
Then, early in 2023, Hazel and Bert looked out of their window and saw that Carol's house, just opposite and along a little, was being cleared. There was no for sale board outside, but when they searched online, they found Carol's house was being sold through an estate agent, like the law firm, in Essex, 70 miles away. The house then appeared to be snapped up at what they and other neighbours felt was a knockdown price.
And I think it was only sold for, what was it sold for? Three, four, five or something? Ridiculous. Not much. Not much.
And your wife Hazel was saying that houses around here you'd expect to get close to $500,000.
Only four, two.
We wouldn't go for less than six for this.
600,000 for your one?
Yeah, and it's got an extension at the back.
But you think that side would go in the state it was in, what would you say?
Probably four, five. Yeah. Four, five-ish.
Yeah. That's when Hazel and Bert got really worried about what was happening.
It was the house being put up for sale in Essex. I mean, if I wanted a house in Uxbridge, would I go and read an Essex newspaper? No. That sent my mind ticking that it never, ever sounded right.
They wrote asking if I could help. I'm an investigative journalist at the BBC. So who was this man who was now running their friend Carol's affairs?
Well, one, I thought she was vulnerable, but I also couldn't understand why she didn't have the same solicitor that her brother had had, her Uxbridge solicitor, and I just thought it was strange.
By this point, I had decided I was going to help them trace Carol. That's because I also knew from other sources that similar things were happening with other people.
Sometimes I get this feeling, I know, if something's not right. And I looked at him and I knew something wasn't right.
And she described someone that wasn't her son. This is where it all come from. Like this person, this man that was visiting her in a care home was not her son.
This is not right. It's awful. It's all you've got.
Yeah. We'll have to set up an agency, us three.
Yeah.
You can be Agatha Krusty.
This is a story about missing people, but there are no bodies. Just a man who acts as a kind of guardian, using legal powers of attorney to run the finances of people who think they need his help. They're often people with no close family, no one to challenge things. But sometimes friends and neighbours will make extraordinary efforts to help someone they fear might be in trouble. I'm Sue Mitchell, and this is The Willpower Detectives from BBC Radio 4. Episode 1, The Doorstep Stranger. Could you see her letting someone take control of her finances if she thought they were a proper solicitor?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I'm sure she would.
Those who are given power of attorney have a legal duty to act in the best interests of the people who entrust them with those powers. They also have a legal duty to show that they've done that, to keep proper records and accounts.
If they said to her, you know, well, this is what's going to happen...
She'd go along with that?
She would go along with it, thinking it was the thing to do. You know, just sign here. I don't think she'd question, just sign here.
She wouldn't?
I don't think she would. No.
The problem for Hazel and Burr is that as friends and neighbours, they've no legal right to know about Carol. And if I'm going to find out anything, I need help from someone who does have rights, a blood relative, a next of kin. Hazel remembers there's a cousin, Sandy.
And you don't know how I'd find the cousin?
No idea.
While we're talking, Burt recalls there's some posts for Carol that they were meaning to send on to her at the home. Burt finds it for me and sifts through, looking for a clue that might lead to this cousin. Postmarks on an envelope, maybe. And lo and behold, there's a postcard from Sandy that's just got caught up in some junk mail.
I've got Sandra here.
Yes!
I've got Sandra.
Yes! And you think that's the cousin in Kent?
Yeah. Can you read that?
Well, we could ring her if you want, from your mobile or mine. Important first step.
Hello?
Hi, Sandra. Sorry, you don't know me. My name's Sue Mitchell. I work at BBC at Radio 4, and I'm with Hazel and Burt, who live on the same street as Carol, your relative.
Oh, right, yes.
They gave me your number. They're here. Just sorry. Say hello, Hazel.
I said this to her. I said, I'm just worried about her. Since she's been in there, I feel as though... It does concern me, but, you know, if I can't get through to her, quite a few times I've rung and they said, oh no, she's not downstairs, I can't get the phone, I'll tell her you call, but I've never heard anything back.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't feel as though it was my place to get really interfering, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
I offered to meet Sandy and to drive us both to the care home to pay a surprise visit to Carol. A few days later, we set out. And Sandy, a cheerful, friendly woman in her 50s with thick blonde hair, tells me that she also had a health crisis at exactly the same time as Carol did. Sandy also nearly died, and she had a heart transplant. That's why she hadn't been there when Carol needed her, even though they'd always been close. Sandy's been ringing the care home. Like Carol's neighbours, she says her calls are never put through to Carol's room. I can see Sandy still isn't really well, and what an effort it is for her to make this journey. She looks tired, and she's getting more worried the nearer we get.
What are scenarios you've been running through?
Well, I'm just hoping she'll be the same old Carol. That's what I'm really hoping. But as I said to you, on the drive up, I will know quite quickly if she's not, yeah. Yeah, it's just difficult to know. It's all the unknown, isn't it? And this is, you know, he only phoned me a week ago, so it's all a bit of a shock for me as well.
Are you kind of prepared for the fact that she might not be in a good state?
I am. I think my head's just saying, please don't be that scenario. Worries me a lot, but I am prepared for that because I wouldn't be surprised.
The Westerly Care Home is in Rickmansworth. It's northwest of London, just off the M25. It's a big Victorian red brick building with a grey slate roof. There's a modern glazed front porch with a coffee table and chairs.
Hello, come to see Carol, Carol Mills.
Carol Mills?
Yes.
Oh, OK. Surprise visit. Thank you. What's your name?
Sandy.
OK.
And a few minutes later, Carol walks out on a Zimmer frame. She's immediately overcome by the sight of Sandy and starts to sob.
Hello.
It's
up
this way. I can see you.
Open the door.
Shock. That's all right.
Oh, it's just a shock.
Oh, bless you. Oh, bless you.
I've just had a rough morning and you made my day. You really have.
Good. You going to take a seat?
Yeah.
There's a seat behind you as well.
Oh, you take this one. Yeah. This one. Oh. This is Sue.
Yeah. Yes.
Carol tells us she desperately wants to leave the Westerly Care Home. She seems mentally sharp, sharp enough to whisper, because she doesn't want the staff to hear what she's saying to us. We move out into the garden for more privacy.
And it's trying to work out what to do.
And this place is driving me mad. Oh, well, it's the residents they've got in there. They're...
Well, you're so young.
And the thing is, a lot of them have got dementia.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just feel totally alienated. Yeah.
Carol explains how she met the man, who is now in control of her money.
Well, he's a solicitor to, you know, a lot of people in here, a lot of the residents.
How did that come about, then?
They said, did I want to speak to him?
They said that at the home?
Yeah, and yeah. I didn't know who he was. Well, he's got connections to this place. The thing is...
The man with the connections in this care home is called Ron Hiller.
Oh, he was introduced me up here.
So he came into your room?
Yeah.
He came... And that was the first time you've met him or heard about
him? Yeah.
He came in and explained to you that what would happen?
Yeah. Well, he said to me the best thing to do was to sell the house because I didn't have any money.
Because you were in a care home, you needed to pay for respite care and you needed to pay the bill.
Yeah. And as I only had, you know, the 14,000 left.
What did you think of that?
I think at the time I was going through a lot with my leg and everything and the pains.
Hmm.
Carol's been left with no bank cards and she's had no bank statements since she's been in the home. She doesn't know what's happened to her passport or birth certificate. They were in her house. So she'd have no way of proving her identity if she walked into a bank branch to try and check on her money. Carol says she's never received the messages left at the home by Sandy.
You never answer your phone?
Oh, no, what happened? My other busted. I've got a new one.
Or her friends, Hazel and Bert. She'd wanted to call them, but the new phone Ron Hiller has given her doesn't contain any of her old contacts.
Have you seen Hazel?
I haven't seen her.
Yeah, I've seen her.
Is she all right?
She misses you.
Her phone number seems to have disappeared.
When Carol shows us this new phone, there are only two contacts saved in it. Ron Hiller and a man called Chris in his office.
The only numbers you've really got are Ron from Craybet Law and Chris from Craybet Law.
Yeah. It strikes me that Carol's marooned here. The mobile doesn't even have a contract. Carol relies on Ron Hiller to top up the credit. And on the day we visit, the credit's all run out.
Well, at the time...
Yeah, you've got no credit.
There is no credit on it, is there?
No.
You see, the trouble is I still don't know what I've actually got.
What, money-wise?
Well, money. Oh, he said, don't worry about money. You've got money, all right. You have money in the bank and it's all right, you know.
Did he give you a statement of what you've got?
He hasn't yet, but I know that it's quite a bit of money. You know, I know that, of course, with the house. Well, the house, of course, you didn't know about that, did you?
Yeah.
In the end, it was a cash deal. Mm. They had a firm that they dealt with all the time.
Is that what he said?
Yeah. It was an estate agent in Essex. But we only got... $350 for it. You know, he said the trouble was at the time that nobody wanted to buy in our area, in that area. And then all of a sudden, you know, this one come in.
Yeah.
As we sit talking, Sandy looks online for Carol's house sale and sees that her property is back up for sale right now. From the photographs, it looks like very little's been done to improve the house. Yet the asking price is almost £100,000 more than the first time it was sold.
I have a three-bedroom property on the market in Uxbridge. Can be four-bedroom. It's a 10-minute walk away from Uxbridge town. We are asking £450,000, looking for a quick sale. We'll consider sensible offers. Good-sized back garden and driveway to fit a car.
Sandy's so alarmed that she telephones the sales agent.
Hello.
Oh, hello. I got this number off a Facebook group. You've got a house for sale in Uxbridge, is that right?
A house for sale? Yes, I think it might be sold by now.
Oh, is it? OK, then.
I'll have a check. I'll keep your number. I'll have a check and I'll give you a ring.
And what sort of condition is the house? Is it...
It's just ready for someone to come in and design it how they'd like.
Oh, so it needs renovating then. Is it a big job?
Whitewashed.
And how much was it? Because my son wasn't sure...
I'm sure it was $450 or
something
like that.
Yeah, OK, thanks.
Bye, Andrew.
OK, thanks then, bye.
Sandy wants to provide Carol with some answers. And so next, she calls Ron Hiller, using the number stored on Carol's phone.
this is Ron Heller, Private Law.
It's Carol Mills, cousin, I keep thinking calling myself her niece. I'm just with her now.
Can you do me a favour while you're there? Can you get Chris to put some money on my phone?
Of course I will.
Thank you.
That's no problem at all.
Right, well, Sandy wants to speak to you now.
She doesn't seem to have any accounts of her money and where she stands at the moment financially.
We've got full records of what she's got financially and her money. Just casual information for you.
Yep.
Carol has sufficient money that she has to pay for her own care.
Yep. And also, what are your fees?
Our fees?
Yeah.
We charge Carol what we call the fixed costs of the court protection.
Right.
Solicitors can either charge by the hour and by the minute.
Yeah.
And my fees are £300 an hour. So rather than charge clients £300 an hour, for people who've lost capacity, which the court has a similar scheme where you can charge by the hour,
mm-hmm.
or you can charge pre-agreed fixed maximum costs.
Okay.
So what we do is we try and charge people like Carol the fixed fees because they're a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
So in round numbers, it's about £1,200 a year.
Yeah.
Plus VAT.
Okay. Did you say about lost capacity or something?
Scheme for fixed fees is what the court uses for people who have lost capacity.
Okay.
To protect them. So we try and use that same fee structure rather than charge our standard rates.
Okay. Obviously, because Carol hasn't lost capacity, has she?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, okay.
No, exactly. Otherwise, it goes out of control with our hourly rates.
Right, okay.
To be candid.
Okay.
It can be like £7,000, £8,000, £9,000 a year, which is little bit inappropriate.
Okay, so we were talking about, apparently you've got power of attorney at the moment. To change that to me?
Can't change it. What would happen is I would have to resign and you would have to apply.
Okay. Yeah, well, we obviously want to do that then.
What you need to be aware of, though, is I'm Carol's financial attorney.
Yep.
So I have control of her finances.
Yep.
Not her welfare.
So Carol's granted Ron Hiller the legal power to make decisions about her finances, and he's charging for that. Exactly how much, Carol has no idea and no way of knowing, since she's not received a single invoice. Ron Hiller claims he's not taken out a separate power for Carol's health and welfare. We make a quick call to the Office of the Public Guardian, the body that regulates power of attorney, and find that's not true.
Right, just bear with me. This is health and welfare I've just looked at.
He told us he hadn't got that for her, so he's lied there. So, OK. Yes, because he said he never got that. I would have never agreed for power attorney, because I know she's fine. And says she's not her health and welfare. No worries, thank you ever so much for your help. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We stay for a few hours talking with Carol. And as we're leaving, I spot the owner of the home in her office by the front door. Sandy starts by asking, where are all Carol's important documents?
Does she have purchase consent? Does she have a debit card here?
No, it's with the solicitor.
Oh, okay. Well,
the solicitor manages all the finances.
Yeah.
So
I know the owner's name as Razia Gogi because I've searched the company accounts before we set out here. I asked Razia Gogi about the relationship between her care home company and Ron Hiller, who Carol has just told us keeps coming in and out of here with unrestricted access to residents, all of them vulnerable. There are no straight answers.
A lot of the clients, and he doesn't just only deal with our clients, he deals with other clients in the Hertfordshire area and Hillingdon area and Essex and Kent and everywhere.
I don't think she really understood what him having power of attorney meant. I mean, she's, you know, quite naive lady. She's very sweet and very trusting, isn't she?
Well, she is, but I don't think Ron would do anything out of order because it's all done by the books. I mean, I've known Ron for 20 years and he's dealt with people's affairs and...
Carol hasn't got no capacity. She knows what she's doing. She can run her own affairs and counts. So I wasn't really sure that why he took that over. She was a sound mind and she didn't need anybody else to do it for her.
She still needs somebody to appoint somebody, a solicitor, to deal with her affairs and that. Yeah. to sell the house and that.
Well, most people get a conveyance.
You just get a conveyance, so yeah, that's all you need.
You should have taken it up with Ron, because Ron's been doing it for 2 years.
She told us it was you that introduced Ron into her life.
Well, Ron comes into the care home, and if there's any other residents who are doing it, I don't introduce Ron. Ron
does. No, she said she was just told about Ron. She wasn't given a choice of other people.
No, she was given cards and things like that, and she chose Ron. It's not just Ron walking in and saying, are you...
It's fine.
No, it's not.
Anyway, we'll get to the bottom of it.
This is something you need to speak to Ron about.
I'll meet Madam again as I go out of here.
Ron should have a list of how much she's been paying.
Because obviously I need paperwork, I need all these things.
I'm sure Ron will be able to give you a very, very clear idea about what he's done.
Why are you sure he will?
Because he's a professional.
What is he? Is he a lawyer?
He is a lawyer.
He's a proper lawyer.
They're proper lawyers.
So Ron is a proper lawyer.
He's a proper lawyer.
We leave the home with this promise from the owner, Razia Gogi, ringing in our ears that Ron Hiller will soon be sending us detailed accounts explaining everything. If they exist, they never arrive. What comes over a couple of weeks is a slow drip feed of Carol's bank statements, with no real explanation of sums withdrawn and hardly any receipts. We go back to the home a couple of weeks later and Sandy and Carol go through what they've been sent.
Where we got so paid out. I mean, at the end of the day, he said he only charged £2,000 a year to look after all Carol's affairs or something he was going on about.
Thousands more has been taken than that flat capped fee that Ron Hiller described in his first phone call with Sandy.
He's billed you, there's all sorts of bills in there.
Yeah,
there's nothing that justifies the amount of money that's missing.
No,
nothing.
I was just trying to figure out.
You didn't really understand what the power attorney meant. So that
perhaps most worrying of all is that Carol's bank card, which would have been so useful to her in the home, is being used to withdraw thousands of pounds in cash from ATMs at a couple of supermarkets in Benfleet, near Ron Hiller's office.
So I've got to tally these all up properly.
Cash withdrawal, £300.
Cash withdrawal, £300.
Cash withdrawal, £300.
Cash withdrawal,
£300.
So on the 26th and the 21st of January last year, 3 days in a row, last January, not this one.
Later, Carol writes to Ron Hiller from the care home to ask him who's drawing cash from her account, using her card and why. He sends a letter claiming Carol's authorised those withdrawals to settle invoices for clearing her house out before it was sold. Carol's asked to see those invoices. They've never been produced. But in another statement, attempting to justify how much of Carol's money has gone, Ron Hiller includes charges for liaising with the clearance company. He names the company as Silverback Commercial Removals. I look it up, thinking we can go direct to them for invoices and to find out what's happened to Carol's things. When I check on the government register of companies in the UK, it turns out that the removal firm lists as its director David James Hiller, Ron Hiller's son.
She got to go and find her?
Yeah.
Bring her out.
It's in the lounge, yeah.
Thank you.
I go back to visit Carol in the home and take Hazel, who first put me onto this investigation.
Well, she's going to be surprised to see you.
Isn't she just...
Are you feeling a bit nervous about seeing her?
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello, hi. Carol.
Did you meet me?
How are you?
I'm fine, you look good.
I'm not.
Oh, but little reunion?
Yes.
Isn't it just?
Thank you.
So that's the mystery of what happened to Carol solved for her neighbour Hazel, who came to me for help.
Right, you take care of yourself.
When we leave, Carol's dreaming of getting out of the home to start a new life somewhere, maybe using the money from her house sale to buy a little flat, if there's enough left. I've promised to try and find out, to help her as much as I can.
What did you think, Hazel?
I thought she looked exceptionally well. I was amazed. But it would be nice to get her out.
But there are so many unanswered questions. I spend the long drive back wondering how many other Carols there might be, people stranded with all their agency stripped from them. What kind of person would leave someone else in that mess? When I get back home, I get straight to work again, checking out Ron Hiller's legal qualifications. His profile online shows a man in his early 60s with grey hair and designer stubble. He's smiling broadly and looks relaxed. His dark blue shirt's open at the collar with no tie. It says online that he's a partner in the elder care division at a law firm, Craybeck Law. Ron Hiller's suggested in that call with Sandy that he is a solicitor by explaining to her how much solicitors can charge. So I searched the official register of qualified solicitors looking for Ron Hiller, and there is no trace of him. I tell Carol about that the next time I go to visit her at the home. Carol's talking me through the paperwork she's had from Ron Hiller, such as it is, when the home manager, Razia Gogi, sweeps over.
I'm not going to interfere, but if there's anything about the care home, then I really need to know.
Well, obviously she's in the care home and you've introduced Ron Hiller into her life, so obviously it does mention the care home. Yes, of course. We have a duty to report on that. I mean, people listening will want to know why Carol wasn't better protected. Why? What do you think you could have done differently?
I don't think so. We gave cards to Carol of different solicitors that she can choose.
You told us that Ron Hiller was a qualified solicitor. Do you remember?
Well,
so is he a qualified solicitor?
As far as I know, yes, he is a qualified solicitor.
So we've rung. Would it surprise you to know we've rung the Solicitors Regulation Authority and he's not a qualified solicitor?
He left his card. He says Craybeck Solicitors. It's a firm of solicitors. I don't know.
I'm recording this story as it unfolds. Ron Hiller and his law firm, Craybeck Law, have been asked to respond. They tell me he has never given the impression that he's a qualified solicitor. They say the firm's governed by the Solicitors Regulation Authority rules and principles, which include strict conduct and ethical guidelines that they uphold, and that the Legal Services Act of 2007 allows individuals who are not qualified solicitors to become partners at law firms. This investigation we've started has come out of love and concern for Carol. Her neighbours worried that she hadn't come home. They called on me to find out what had happened, and together we found Carol's cousin, Sandy. What we've achieved, all of us, may have given Carol back some control of her future.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, dear.
Bye.
I feel sad and anxious leaving Carol here. And it dawns on me as I walk away to my car that when you live in a care home, it's your only home, and it takes a lot of courage to complain about anything. Carol's relationship with the care home manager can never be the same now, but it's made all of us more determined to get to the bottom of this, to get Carol out. I'm Sue Mitchell, and that was episode one of the Willpower Detectives. It's a BBC Studios production for BBC Radio 4. You can find all the episodes on BBC Sounds. It was produced by me, Winifred Robinson and Joel Moores, with help from Professor Carolyn Stevens. Original music was by Mom Tudy. Sound design was by Tom Brignall. Next, the secret recordings that show how a social worker has been helping drum up business for Ron Hiller.
You're a vulnerable adult who lives on your own. We need the solicitor to do that part for you.
There is so much of this story still to come, and if you're desperate to find out what's been going on, the entire series is available right now on BBC Sounds. But before you do that, make sure you follow Your Next Podcast right here so you don't miss a thing from me. You can find all my recommendations, along with news, reviews, and much more on Podcast Rex at www.podcastrex.com. That's www.podcastrex.com.